Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzam Azoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about the creation of life. We'll try to understand, maybe, how did the inanimate become animate? Be with us. It's going to be really interesting. Nitza, please. Yeah. The creation of life or its origin is one of the most intriguing things studied by science because, of course, this has implications. We study the processes we went through in order to learn how to further advance. And we study things in retrospect in order to better understand our future. So scientists can more or less say at what point in life did the still turn into vegetative and the vegetative turned into animate. But what's unclear is what is that moment where the inanimate became animate? But first of all, let's try and understand what is the inanimate before we understand what life is. The inanimate is a desire that wants to absorb that which is to its benefit and to reject whatever is to its detriment, the way it's arranged, the way it was formed. The desire to absorb what's to its benefit and to push away what's to its detriment. Yeah. In its simple form, it's called the inanimate. And the wisdom of Kabbalah calls it a desire. Yeah. It's interesting because usually desire is something that we attribute to a higher degree, like to humans. No, take any still matter. Doesn't it have a desire? It keeps its structure, its form. It rejects other things. You can't break into its boundaries. Even if its air is something, you have to permeate it, all the more if it's liquid or solid matter, and therefore it's a desire, meaning that it stands its ground, meaning that it keeps a certain order inside of it, a certain inner structure. Now, if so, then this is the still, and if so, what is the animate, then what is life? Life means that it receives and gives, that there's already an action in it, not only an action. There is an entire system that knows what does it have to absorb and what does it have to emit. But also the still, you said that it knows what to absorb and what to emit. Yes, but here we have a specific kind of absorption. I'd say a scrutinized one, a selective one. What does it absorb from its environment and what does it give to its environment? Inside there is metabolism. And if so, it has a mutual connection with the environment. And there are different forces and substances that are emitted from it. And instead of it, it receives substances and forces from the environment. This is already the feeling of life. I read this definition of what does NASA say about life. It says that it's a self-sustaining chemical system capable of Darwinian evolution. This is how it defines it. So, life, according to what you're saying, is anything that's animate and has some kind of interaction with its environment. Yeah. That it plans and controls. The still has no interaction with the environment. It does, but it has no systems by which it can change itself. This is why it's called still. Can you explain? Because it has unchanging qualities. Its attitude toward the environment doesn't change. But it is the way that it is until the external forces will turn it into something else. What additional factor is added to the still that suddenly turns it into an animate system? The desire to absorb good things and emit bad things. Meaning, additional desire, not only, it's an entire inner system where it knows what is to its benefit, what is to its detriment, and correspondingly the systems that perform the absorption and emission are revealed in it. In every transition from the still to the vegetative, there is an entire system that starts developing. And then there's another leap from the vegetative to the animate, meaning it gets an additional, more sophisticated system, or what? More sophisticated, with the ability to scrutinize, with the ability to absorb and emit, bring closer what's beneficial, pushing away what's harmful, not like the still or even like the vegetative, which is nonetheless very limited in its actions, meaning according to the measure to which its desire to keep itself is small, it doesn't move that much really, only in relation to the sun, the air. But the animate has a very strong desire, and it wants to absorb more and emit more. It has very big systems for digestion and for everything, for breathing, for everything. And therefore, it can move from place to place. It has to look for a better place. It procreates differently than the vegetative. It's a really new world. The animal world, the world of animate bodies. And this is how it exists. Now, there's this concept called spontaneous evolution that talks about the transition from the still to the vegetative, where they can't explain, then this is how they call it. Right. So, according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, what causes the still to suddenly develop a more sophisticated system that knows how to select and interact? I'd say that nothing happens spontaneously, this one thing. Another thing is that even before we start talking about the real still, the very primary still, there's already a system that exists in potential that is later on realized, actualized in substances, that this system develops and is built and is arranged to bring forth all of these substances in the still vegetative, animate, and in humans, that it develops them, reveals them, builds them. And that we see before us, the still, the vegetative, the animate, and the speaking, it's all in all a result of that which already exists in nature and potential, and now is executed in practice. So there is a kind of template that develops us all the time, taking us through different evolutional processes. So, why did life begin then? Why was it suddenly created? What for? Life was created so that the force of absorption, the desire to live, to receive, to enjoy, to absorb, that exists in the still, the vegetative, or animate bodies, for this force to be able to fully develop. Do you think that man will ever be able to turn the inanimate into animate? Never. Why? It's impossible. Because he doesn't have the ability to change the inner desire of nature. So, man can take some living tissue and make something of it. Of course. But to turn the inanimate into animate, if it's really something inanimate, never. There are many experiments in the field, so I'm asking. Now, about the degrees of connection between the still, the vegetative, and the animate. Is there some kind of connection between them, communication? Yeah, the connection is that there has to be an inner system that keeps itself, a protective system, first and foremost, that protects this created being, this creature, all of them, making sure that it doesn't move, it doesn't change, that nothing happens to it, that it simply protects what it is, meaning the next moment has to be like the previous one. And to the measure to which it has reached that, and that it already has these steady, fixed, protective systems that keep it in a constant state, then the system itself develops, leading it to more complex states. And then it accordingly evolves, absorbing more and more information and substances, and also correspondingly emits more information and substances, and then this force is called the vital force. We see something very interesting, that a certain degree has developed something more advanced, but it doesn't disappear. It's not that all the still turned into vegetative. Do these levels have a certain role? Nothing disappears. Everything exists in nature. We see that there are certain forms that disappear. But the foundations, like on the still level, they remain. They're kept as a part of the developmental process. Of course, they change too. It's not the same rocks or water or air, but still. I want to ask about something you previously explained. You said that what we see in nature, the still, the vegetative, the animate, that it's only a result of that which exists in nature, in potential, and is later on realized in practice. So, just to see if I understand, before evolution advances to the still, vegetative, animate, with all the varieties and species and everything, you're saying that all the forms that we'll see on Earth exist in nature in potential to begin with? Yeah. And afterwards, they're realized in practice. So where do they exist in nature and potential? In potential, as a force. You don't see forces. Is it a still force, vegetative force? What is this force? A force is a force, meaning that it's not clothed in anything. And what's defined in it? Everything. The entire evolution of the still, vegetative, animate human beings, and everything that occurs with them throughout their thousands of years of evolution, already exists in that force that exists in nature. Where? There is no place, because it's a force. Now, when we look at how life evolves, we see that these are systems that are becoming more and more sophisticated, complex. What is evolution preparing for us from this point on? Are there any further forms of life that are awaiting us? No. Are human beings the peak of evolution? Yeah. If you can call it a peak. I don't see it that way, but suppose. So this is what I'm asking about. Meaning, obviously, it's not the peak yet. There is yet what to get to. We have to acknowledge that we are the most miserable, ignoble, lowly, evil, bad, and that we have to correct ourselves. Because we're the only ones in nature that are harming all of nature. Really doing harm to the still, the vegetative, the animate, to people on the human level. We're destroying everything. Therefore, I wouldn't say that we're the peak of evolution. I'd say that we're the abyss of evolution, and we have to acknowledge that and to start correcting ourselves. Previously, you said that all the forms of development that will occur in evolution, they're all predetermined in that force that exists in nature. Yeah. So the current state where mankind is destroying all the rest of the species on this planet is also predetermined. Of course, Kabbalists wrote about this thousands of years ago. So, if you're saying that all the forms and species and degrees that we saw in the development of the still, the vegetative, the animate, and our development as a human species and so on, and up to the point where we're destroying everything around us, all of this is determined in potential in that force of nature, then what are the future forms that are supposed to be revealed if everything's predetermined? No, we have to reach the recognition of evil that nature, to begin with, planned us, as opposed to all the rest of its parts, in a way that we are out to destroy each other. No other creature of the still, the vegetative, the animate degrees, no other creature besides the human degree develops to a state where it destroys itself and others and its environment and everything. It's good that we can't fly to some other place in outer space because we destroy it too. So, that which exists in human beings that does not exist in the still, the vegetative, and the animate is like this destructive desire. Yeah. That's the special thing that we got. Yeah, our desire to receive. So there's this destructive desire that also has a role, as I understand. It does. What is it? We have to investigate it and understand that it's pushing us to destroy our entire little planet, and that we'll decide that we have to build a different life based on love and connection and on bestowing good to everyone. This is what we have to do. And we'll have to change our attitude toward the rest of nature. This is precisely what is upon us human beings to do. And then we'll see a different life. Life, our way of life, will change once we change our attitude. Not instantaneously, but it's a process. How will life change? When I asked you what life is, you said that it's a system, a complex system that knows how to absorb what's good for it, how to emit or push away what's bad for it, and you said that this is life. A more advanced form of life, what is that? Where we act to the benefit of society and not to the benefit of our particular ego. Meaning that we don't go on a path of collision with one another like some particles or vicious beasts or something, but that we're above our egoistic nature and we treat each other in a friendly way. So there's a very meaningful point in evolution here, that the mechanism that up until now, starting with the still and up to the point where we are today, that was used to absorbing what's good and emitting what's bad in this ever-developing, increasingly sophisticated system, that it has to understand something, that it can no longer develop in this direction. What I'm looking for is that transitional point or phase where the still suddenly became vegetative. What will make us change our ways? Yeah, how is our inner system supposed to understand that it's supposed to evolve differently? Suffering. The feeling of death approaching. It will cause us to understand that something in this process has to change. Yeah. Otherwise, we'll die. We'll reach a point where we destroy ourselves completely. Did evolution come to an end? Evolution in the way that it's bringing us to the biggest possible egoistic desire came to its end. What does it mean that evolution came to an end? What, nature is going to sleep? No. It brought us to a state where we're developing in the last stage of the ego, and in this stage, the ego has to acknowledge that it's destroying, that it's consuming itself. And what will be the next degree of evolution? That, instead of destroying ourselves, we'll take the forces that exist in nature, and that we'll correct ourselves using our ego in a correct way. So there are additional forces in nature that the system that's sustaining us right now, our system, hasn't identified yet, right? Some kind of external force that it didn't identify yet, with the help of which it can advance to a more developed way of life. Yeah? In the development from the still to the vegetative, there was some kind of critical development. Yeah? The state that we live in today as a mankind in the system of nature, is there another essential change awaiting us? The recognition of evil? That our nature is evil and that it's pulling us toward destruction. And then the next essential change, what will it be? That we will resist this and we will build such systems that will educate us, that will teach us how to move away from this evil, from using our ego unboundedly. And this more advanced being, creature that will go through this essential change, how will he be different, smarter, more emotional? What will change about such a person? Just the recognition of evil. That he will feel that it's possible to use the ego in a bad way and in a good way, and he'll want to use it for the better. What will he know to do that a person doesn't know how to do today? How to do good to others? So, it's not that his form will change like the still turned into. No. So, our change, the essential change for us, won't be something physical. We'll probably still have 2 feet and so on, but something internal will change in us. That will evolve. Yeah. Why so? In all of our previous developments, we did see a change in form. Still, vegetative, animate, man. Why not the next change? Because we've reached the final and worst form, which is very evolved, and so much so evolved that it can destroy everything. Thank God we only got this planet in order to try and destroy it and to learn from it as much as we can. And here to perform self-scrutiny and to, so to speak, repent. What is this more advanced way of existence? How would you define it? You can do it right now. Start loving everyone and treating everyone according to the law of love. Everything, still, the vegetative, the animate, people, everything. How will that influence my life? You'll get great satisfaction through these creatures, the still, the vegetative, animate, and the speaking, by treating them with love. Through them, you'll start feeling reality. That they're all included in you and that you're included in all of them. And then what follows is that you're integrated with the entire world and you reveal the force that works, acts in the entire world. It's called the acting force and the enacted being. You start acknowledging the force of nature that develops nature, evolves it, enlivens it. And this is how all the created beings exist. So you start identifying with that force that controls nature called the Creator. This is the force that, to begin with, you said that all the future forms of development are defined in it. Yeah. And why is it that by an attitude of love toward the still, the vegetative, the animate, toward all the people around me and everything, I can reveal this force in nature? Because it exists in everyone and everything, only you don't. exist in the same values in order to reveal it, to feel it. So it's hidden. You're the one that's hiding, concealing it. Because of your disparity in qualities, you're in hate towards everyone, and he is in love towards everyone. So, what is the peak of life? The peak of life is in love toward everyone to feel the whole, complete, perfect, and eternal reality. And you yourself to become whole, complete, and eternal. I have a question. Everything that you've explained here and now is what the wisdom of Kabbalah teaches, right? Where would you categorize the wisdom of Kabbalah compared with the religious attitude toward the development of life and the scientific attitude or approach towards the development of life? It's completely unrelated to the religious approach. And it's somewhat related to the scientific approach, but it depends on how you use science in order to explain the wisdom of Kabbalah. And if going back to the wisdom of Kabbalah itself, how does it define the creation of life and its development? The force of bestowal that exists in the substance of the will to receive is called the light of life, the spirit of life that exists in a dead body. And life itself, how would you define it? Life itself is the measure of suitability between the creature called man and the general force of bestowal called the creator. In Hebrew, bore, from the words bo ue, come and see. This is called life. Last question. Mankind, the mankind of tomorrow, how will it be essentially different than mankind as we know it today? In that everyone will understand what is good and what is bad and will move away from the bad to the good. Dr. Lightman, what can I say? I have a million more questions, but our time's unfortunately up. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best. Yeah.